Do you know anyone who doesn't like change? Well, they might be a carrot, because it takes them a little longer to adjust and soften up, kind of like carrots in a crock pot. And Ron Deal says it's kind of similar when you're blending a family. Here's Ron.
Lots of stepfamilies have a carrot. Everything else is softening very nicely. Everything else is beginning to come together, but you got a carrot who says, I don't think so. And it is what it is, and you can't fool food. You can't rush it. You can't force it. You can't demand it, because as soon as you go back into blendering, high heat, it tends to work against you. Trust the crock pot. Don't cook a stepfamily with a blender. Cook it with a crock pot.
Some things just take time. And if you're part of a stepfamily, you probably know that to be true. Ron Deal is going to share some secret ingredients in blending stepfamilies on this edition of Family Life This Week. Welcome to Family Life This Week. I'm Michelle Hill. I love to cook now that I know how to cook and how the spices work together. Just like a little bit of lemon juice, a little bit of honey, and some oregano bring out the flavors in your pizza sauce or in your spaghetti sauce. And I always keep some Worcester sauce. Can you say that three times fast? Because that's, where did they come up with that word? But I always keep some Worcester sauce and some soy sauce on hand to bring out the flavors in my meat. And the other night, my recipe called for turkey sausage, and all I had in the refrigerator was some ground turkey, and I didn't want to run out to the store again. So I used some extra sauce and a little bit of this and a little bit more of that, and voila, I had the best dish ever. Okay, maybe not ever. But Ron Deal uses the example of cooking many times when he talks about blended or stepfamilies. He says there are some flavors and situations that just take time. Just like there are some recipes that you wouldn't want to use your microwave for, no matter how wonderful those little contraptions are. Ron Deal is director of Family Life Blended. He has over 25 years of experience in counseling families through difficult transitions, and he knows how to help us grasp and apply all that he shares. Here's Ron setting up the complexity of stepfamilies.
So let me tell you about Susie and John. They lived in one part of the universe, and they got married, and they had three kids, Mary, Mike, and John Jr. But as life would have it, Susie and John divorced. In another part of the universe is Bob and Betty. They, too, got married. They, too, had two kids, Ted and Carrie, and they, too, divorced. Since that time, Betty has remarried Frank. Bob has remarried Susie. Now, when Susie married Bob, she knew she was getting a mother-in-law and a father-in-law. That's what you get when you get married to somebody. But she had no clue that she was also getting an ex-wife-in-law. An ex-wife-in-law? Well, what do you mean by that? Well, you know, Bob's ex-wife, Betty. Wait a minute, Susie says. Ron, are you telling me Betty is a part of our family? Well, I know she doesn't come over and help clean up after dinner, or she doesn't donate any of her money to paying your bills. I get that. But oh yeah, she's a part of your family. All she has to do is pick up the phone and call Bob, and the weekend schedule changes. And so Susie has to now deal with the fact that her life is being controlled or scheduled and so on by another woman. But here's the little backstory I need to tell you about Susie. You see, when she's one of those large and in charge moms that gets it all done, all right? She's got the schedules, she's got the kids' routines, she's got this going and that going, she's aware of what's going on with the kids emotionally, and she's on top of all of it. Well, when she married Bob, one of the things she liked about him was he's pretty amenable. I mean, he kind of goes along and gets along, right? Especially as it relates to the children. He's just kind of flexible that way. It's all good with him. But what she didn't realize is that her ex-wife-in-law, Betty, is also a large and in charge mom. And so now what you can see in this new situation, this new step family with three houses in it and five different people trying to parent the five kids, is that Susie and Betty are constantly in competition for Bob's affirmation and Bob going along and Bob saying, yeah, that's good with me. Betty can pick up the phone, call her ex-husband and ask him to change the schedule, and he's all good with that. But now that he's married to Susie, who says, whoa, wait a minute. How is it that she gets to dictate our schedule? Bob finds himself stuck between two women who are warring over his time and is saying, yes, honey, I'll go along with that. Susie has primary custody of her three kids. They live with her mother and their stepdad, and every other weekend and 6 weeks in the summer, they're spending time with their dad, John. Betty has primary custody of her two kids. They live with their mom and their stepdad, and on occasion, Bob and Susie have all five. Can anybody spell the word complexity? So whatever your story is, you got to figure out complexity. And you got to just step back from it every once in a while, go, okay, honey, it's you and me against that. Complexity brings stress. But here's the real kicker. Stress thickens blood. What I mean by that is functionally, you're all kind of here, and as the stress goes up on the Susies and the Bobs, what they tend to do is to kind of, you know, Susie begins to look after her cubbies a little bit more. And so she begins to kind of divide lines, like my kids and me over here, or I don't want them to hurt any more than they've already hurt. It's already been hard enough as it is. And I get that. You don't want the kids to hurt anymore. But when you begin to kind of resort to protectiveness, then that means you're unwilling to connect and do some agreement and find some willingness to risk on behalf of the marriage, then sometimes you're more protecting the kids than you are your relationship, your marriage. And that thickens the bloodline, and it thickens it over here, but it weakens it over there. And so let's talk about how you cook a stepfamily. This is kind of an attitude and an approach to building relationships within your home, but it's really a long-term attitude. It really says, okay, what does it take for us to kind of become family? You didn't realize you were asking that question, but that's the question that really gets asked. Because your kid or their kid or both kids or ex-spouses or grandparents are all now going, okay, so how do I relate to you? So really the question is, how are we going to fit? In what way are we going to be family? To what degree are we going to be family with one another? And you probably didn't realize it, but you've got a philosophy about how to cook this family with all these different parts. When you say, honey, why don't you take Johnny out and throw the football? That's a cooking strategy. What you're saying is, go spend time together, enjoy something together, and you guys will bond and create relationship, and you'll become family. Now, that makes sense. That's what you want. That's your heart's desire. That's what we're after. There's nothing wrong with that goal. Please hear me. There's nothing wrong with the goal. But on occasion, the strategies, the cooking strategies that we can use sometimes do more harm than they do good. For example, saying to kids, I know he's not your dad, but why don't you just call him dad anyway? That's a cooking strategy. I'm gonna lump that into the blender category, right? You're gonna be a blended family. We're gonna use a blender to make this thing work. So what happens when you put all the ingredients in a blender and you turn it on? You force them into relationship with one another. You take a whole lot of different ingredients and you cram them together with friction and high heat and stress, and all of a sudden they're one fluid mixture. And as the joke goes, somebody had to get creamed in the process. Usually that's a child. So let's go back and talk a little bit about Susie and Bob for a minute. You see, Susie grew up in a family. They do a whole lot of stuff together all the time, every holidays, all the traditions. There's a togetherness message in everything that they do. Bob grew up in a family that on this continuum is about right here. They really value their independent time. And so here's their different styles, right? So then they get married, and what happens in their blendering, right? So they make these assumptions about how they're going to become family to one another. And Susie, large and in charge, really has a high, high need for that to happen fast. And of course she would, because being together is a sign that things are okay, and that's what you want. So Saturday morning comes, and it goes like this. Susie walks into Bob. He's shaving. And she says, listen, honey, I just looked at the family calendar. You're not going to believe what I just saw. She says, it's Saturday. All five kids are here with us, and we have nothing to do today. And Bob says, really? No soccer games? No church function? No, we don't have to mow the yard? She says, no, it's done. It's taken care of. Can you believe we have nothing to do all afternoon? I got an idea. And Bob goes, oh, no. Okay, what's your idea? And she says, well, I'm thinking we ought to do something together today. And Bob goes, okay, honey. Remember, go along, flexible, right? Keep the peace. I'll go tell my kids. I'll go break the news. Hey, guys, listen, 2 o'clock today. We're all going to climb in the car. We're all going to go bowling. Ted goes, whoa, hold on, Dad. I can't go, Dad, not me. No, son, I'm sorry. We're all going to go. So be ready, 2 o'clock. Susie goes and tells her kids, guess what we're going to do today? We're all going to go bowling. Yay! Everybody's excited, thrilled, happy. 2 o'clock comes. They pile into the minivan. They don't even get out of the driveway. And you know what happens, right? Ted starts picking on the youngest. And they're he's touching me in the back seat of the car. Bob spins around. I don't know, ain't touching anybody. We're having fun today. You're going to have fun whether you like it or not. That's what blenders do. And so they go to the bowling alley, and the whole day, it's just kind of seething below the surface, right? And it's bubbling up, and it's just brewing and brewing. And most of it centers around Bob's oldest son, Ted, who just kind of is the antagonist in the home at that point in time. He's a teenager, and he's just kind of got the attitude thing going on. And Susie's over there going, if my husband would just take care of business with that boy, we'd be having fun and we'd be happy right now. But no, he's just talking to him. So Susie, who's never had a 17-year-old son, is now knowing exactly what Bob ought to be doing to fix this situation. So it's been seething below the surface until it breaks through the emotional ceiling, which is that place where Susie can't stand it no more. And so she runs over to her husband and says, that's it. I'm sick and tired of this. You need to settle him. I am trying to say, no, you're not. As if you were taking care of this, we'd be happy right now. I don't be happy. And then she turns on Ted, and Ted's going, whatever made you lose? Get out of my face. You're not my mom. What I would suggest, there's a whole lot going on in this scenario, but what's pushing it, what's driving it, the fuel that's in the tank, is this blender assumption that says, we have to make it happen now. We got to cook this thing. We got to get these people to like each other. We got to be family to one another. So we'll orchestrate in our timing as adults when the kids are going to be happy. That's really funny when you say it out loud, isn't it? And so it goes into push and demand and shove and orchestrate, and it's all about our need to not feel guilty anymore. I know what you're after. The goal is not the issue. The goal is fine. Familyness is the goal. That's great. But the strategy might not get you there.
Well, Ron, that means we're not a family, and if we're not a family, then I'm feeling guilty.
Yes. You can wrestle with that guilt. Just don't let it control you. Because if it controls you, then it's going to push you back into blundering. And then you're blundering. You with me? Don't cook a stepfamily with a blender. Cook it with a crock pot.
Ron Deal talking about the importance of blending a stepfamily in the slow process. Just think about all the complex situations that stepfamilies need to work through in order to take people from being individuals to being a complete family. Hey, we need to take a break, but we're going to hear more from Ron when we come back in 2 minutes. Stay tuned.
Okay, so you're a mom in a blended family. Have you ever heard this one before? You love him more than you love us.
For Family Life Blended, here's Ron Deal.
You know, lots of moms or dads have heard that accusation from their kids. It usually comes when the kids are feeling insecure. So what do you do? I mean, what is the priority in your life? Well, here's what you say. My spouse is the most important adult in my life. You kids are the most important kids in my life. I love you both very much. God has given me more than enough love for all of you. I will always be here for you. You know, one antidote to a child's insecurity is your reassurance and a big hug. For Family Life Blended, I'm Ron Deal.
To find out more, visit familylifeblended.com.
I can't move anything.
Did the doctor express any hope?
I'm pretty sure she's going to come off of the ventilator, and beyond that, hope is discouraged.
Sometimes God leads us on very difficult paths.
Is God still good, whether someone walks again or not?
On the Unfavorable Odds podcast, Kim Anthony talks with guests who have faced extraordinarily difficult circumstances.
That was really the last meaningful conversation I'd ever had with my 3-year-old child.
How should we respond when the events of life leave us despairing?
Lord, please let me go home to heaven to be with you now. I cannot do this.
In the midst of our despair, there is still strength and hope found in Jesus.
I heard that my worst nightmare had occurred, and it was so surprising to me what came out of my mouth.
You can find the Unfavorable Odds podcast with Kim Anthony wherever you get your podcasts, or go to familylife.com/podcasts.
Welcome back to Family Life This Week. I'm Michelle Hill. Every day, Ron Deal is helping people understand and navigate tough relationships. And he does that a number of ways, through his resources and also through events. And there's an event coming up next month in October called the Summit on Step Family Ministry. And if you're a part of a step family or in a church that wants to help equip step families, check out the link on our website, familylifethisweek.com. That's familylifethisweek.com. Now back to more from Ron. He's talking about the recipe for successful step families. Here's Ron again.
Don't cook a step family with a blender. Cook it with a crock pot. What's different about crock pots? They're slow. You ever come home at the end of the work day and go, let's make something in the crock pot? No, you don't. If you didn't do it before you left for work, you ain't having crock pot that night. You know what I'm saying? It's slow, and it works on low heat. Very different cooking method than anything else. Very different than a blender for sure, than an oven, than a microwave, that are all fast and high heat. This is slow and low heat. Low heat is be intentional about building togetherness, about becoming family. Be intentional about it. That's low heat. You got to have some heat or it doesn't cook, right? But the difference is it's low as opposed to high pressure heat that's on my time, in my way. That's low heat. Time is just time. Patricia Papernow and her research on step families suggests that it takes the average step family between 5 and 7 years to begin to answer the question, who are we to one another? To find their familyness, to find that sense of identity, and to find their relationships, and that's normal. And if you just heard that, some of you just went, "Dear God, what does that mean?" And at the same time, there's some hope in that, because for some of you, you're going, "Man, I don't know why it's not going faster. I don't know why it's not working. Why are we still struggling with some of this stuff? Why do we still have this stress? Why does that kid not like? How come you and I?" And part of it is you're still cooking, for crying out loud. You're not supposed to be there yet. You're more normal than you thought. And that's the good news. But it does mean you have to continue to be intentional, and be intentional in a smart way, not necessarily just in this chaotic kind of push it all together way. Trust the clock, because you can't rush the clock. Let's think about it. Let's cook some stew. What kind of ingredients do you throw in your stew? Onions and carrots and potatoes and beef and broth and pepper. We got to kick it up a notch. Yeah, okay, so you with me, right? So we're going to take these ingredients and put them in our crock pot. And when you cook with a crock pot, you just kind of dump it in, right? It's called a wedding. And what you've done is you've dropped them. And as they happen to fall into the crock pot on the day of the wedding, the beef and the broth and the carrots are all on one side because they're all biologically connected to one another. They're all insiders. They're all tight. They got the same last name, same bloodline, same DNA. Then over here on this side of the crock pot, we've got celery and we've got, what did I miss? The pepper and the potatoes over here. And they've got the same DNA, same last name. And they have the same bloodline and history and lost story and everything that ties them together. And they just kind of, there they are. And you put the lid on, you turn it on, and you walk away. It's called a wedding. And here we begin to cook. And as it would be, those ingredients begin to soften over time. And it usually takes a whole lot of time for that to even get some heat going. And then you get a little momentum. And then the ingredients begin to soften. And here's the really strange thing about this. They soften on their own time. I mean, carrots soften at a different pace than the potatoes. Everything's on its own time. I was doing a seminar one time, and a couple came up to me at the break. She said, "You know what? I was talking to my husband. He's a chef. And he was saying, Ron's exactly right about that crock pot thing. You can't fool food." And she said, "You can't make something cook faster than it's going to cook." Well, as I like to call it, lots of step families have a carrot. Everything else is softening very nicely. Everything else, the couple has started this thing, and everything else is beginning to come together. But you got a carrot who says, I don't think so. And that carrot sometimes is an ex-spouse who is just a thorn in your family flesh. Sometimes that carrot is a teenager, just because. Sometimes that carrot is a part-time child who you get very little time with, and they're in for a weekend, and then they're gone. And it just, time doesn't really accumulate. You kind of start and stop and start and stop and start over. And that, it's a functional carrot. It's not an attitude. It's just time. It's not working. I mean, you got a carrot. Maybe 2 or 3 different ingredients might be softening at a different pace. And that could be frustrating because you're going, boy, we got lots going here, but we just got that thing there. Yeah, and it is what it is. And you can't fool food. You can't rush it. You can't force it. You can't demand it. Because as soon as you go back into blendering, high heat, it tends to work against you. Trust the crock pot. Now, in that environment of crock potting, there's still some barriers. If we were to just kind of chart this, let's talk about bonding in a stepfamily. In a first marriage situation, you have an individual who marries another individual and they become a couple. Then they have kids and they become parents and they develop a relationship with those children. Now let's just push pause for a minute because this little equation here, number one, it's God's design and there's a reason why it works best for adults and for kids. The first thing is the individuals come together and they form the foundation to the home. That is their coupleness. And that coupleness precedes the children. And so the whole time the kids are growing up, there's this natural order to things that kids just know mom, dad came first. And that does a whole lot to orient their world as kids need. Number one, it says to them, the world doesn't revolve around you, and every kid in the world needs to know that. Because if they don't know that, then they feel like they should be the center and they should be able to make demands and everybody should be able to follow them. The other thing this does for kids is it teaches them their place in the world. You're not the center, we're the authority. So it sets up parenting to be successful. And it's just the natural order. The other thing I would point out about this is that naturally kids are just as invested in their parents' marriage as the parents are. I mean, if you split up, in this situation, the kids are fighting to get back together again. That's their world. Their security and safety is tied to that unity. So they're equally invested in the success of the marriage. But what happens after death or divorce is that we've essentially lost coupleness. So the foundation has kind of been pulled away. And I think the first thing we have to do is just be honest and admit that there's been a trauma to the family system, to the stability of the home. The foundation is gone. It's not cracked. It's gone. And so now the whole unit has to kind of reorganize around something. I'm thinking of the guy who was sitting in a conference just like this, raised his hand about now and said, boy, I really don't like what you're saying. And I said, okay, great, talk to me. And he goes, no, I like what you're saying. It's just not my life, but I wish it was. I said, what do you mean? He said, okay, I'd never been married before. I didn't have any kids when I met my wife. She was one of those large and in charge moms like you've been talking about. He said she had three children, and boy, she had it going on, schedules, routines. She just kept it all going all the way through the single parent years. She handled it masterfully, and here we come together, and man, I just knew not to mess with mom's routine, right? The style, the way she ran things. He said, you know, as a matter of fact, when they would get in the car, when she was a single parent, she had this very elaborate system of determining who gets to ride in the front seat with mom when they get in the car. And it depended on whose turn it was, how far they were going, you know, when it was going to be the next go around. He said, man, I was smart enough not to mess with that. So I got in the back seat and we went on with life. Then he looks at me and he says, we've been married 2.5 years and I still ride in the back seat of the car. All right, so let's talk through that for a minute, right? Something's wrong in this scenario. We got to try to figure out how to elevate his status to a place of priority, right? And let's just play it out a little bit. It's Monday morning, they're all riding in one car, they're going to drop off at school and work and on and on and on, and they walk out into the driveway, and stepdad, he is sick and tired of getting slapped in the face. And stepdad says, hey dude, back seat. What do you mean? It's my turn, front seat. I mean, let's just play it out a little bit. What is Johnny going to do when he says get in the back seat? Little Johnny's going to look at his stepdad and go, Mom, yeah, he's going to come up with some gas, right? G-A-S-S, guilt trip, anger, silent treatment, or sadness. These are the tools that kids use against us. So his gas is going to be about a 3 or a 4. About that time, he spots Mom walking out the front door and immediately, Mom, right? Here's my savior. She'll look after me. Now, if Mom just happens to be one of those paralyzed biological parents who is easily overcome by the guilt, then she's probably going to walk out, what, back seat? Oh, my baby. And look at her husband and say, okay, you're the adult. You know, it is his turn. Just one more time. Okay, but let's play it out. What if she's not paralyzed? What if she's going to embolden herself as mom? Knowing that in this scenario, this is going to be a heartbreak for her little Johnny. And it's not just heartbreak for Johnny. We're changing the rules for crying out loud. And this is all they've ever known. But this is a rule change. This is a shifting of authority in the family. This is significant. And so what's going to happen if she finds the courage to go, "Oh, dude, I'm sorry. It is your turn. Get in the back." What's going to happen? The gas scale, the 3 just went to a 9.9. And he's going to pull out his little trump card. "Dad wouldn't make me do this." And the gas goes up. He throws a fit. Gets in the car. Slams the door. "I'm not going to talk to anybody on the way to school." And he gets out of school and he slams the door and he stomps in. And what's mom's heart feeling? Guilt and sadness and sorrow for this kid, because she realizes this is another change he didn't ask for. He didn't ask for this. And he didn't ask for all those other changes. If we back up down the law story, there's been a whole lot of stuff he didn't ask for. It's another thing. And she can feel sorry for him, but she cannot afford to be paralyzed by that sorrow. But functionally, what it does is it moves your relationship to the right place, to a powerful place that systematically in the crock pot then puts the step parent into a place where they can actually be part of the parenting team, and your marriage strengthens the whole family. If you don't do this, biological parents, if you don't find that courage in those moments, it is the equivalent of unplugging the crock pot. No more heat, no more cooking. It's hard, it's risky, but there's rewards there.
Blending families is hard, and many times it's a slow and painful process. But as Ron said, there are rewards there. I'm so glad we have Ron Deal and his team to help families blend successfully. If you're a part of a blended or step family and would like some resources, because you might need help, maybe you want to help others. Maybe you're just curious. We have a link on our website to Family Life Blended where you can find articles and other resources and help. FamilyLifeThisWeek.com. That's at FamilyLifeThisWeek.com. Hey, coming up next week, we're going to hear from Dave and Ann Wilson, and they're going to talk to us about our true purpose here on Earth. Hope you can join us for that. Thanks for listening. I want to thank the president of Family Life, David Robbins, and our co-founder, Dennis Rainey, along with our station partners around the country. And a big thank you to our engineer today, Bruce Goff, our producer, Marcus Holt, and Justin Adams is our mastering engineer. Megan Martin is our production coordinator. And Raven Simmons is our production intern. Our program is a production of Family Life Today. And our mission is to effectively develop godly families who change the world one home at a time. I'm Michelle Hill, inviting you to join us again next time for another edition of Family Life This Week.